You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Welcome to Recode Media with Peter Kafka. That is me. Happy almost Thanksgiving. Maybe it's Thanksgiving when you're listening to this. Maybe you've already had a good Thanksgiving. No matter what, enjoy your Thanksgiving. We are not traveling this year. We are staying at home. It's a bummer. We don't get to see family. On the upside, we are reviving an old Kafka family tradition and making our own pizza. I highly recommend it. Everyone likes pizza. It's easy to make your own pizza. Everyone gets to make the pizza they want. It's collective. It's individual. It's America. Yay, America. Okay, a couple words about this week's show. It's an interview with Gimlet's Lydia Polgreen. Lydia, as many of you know, was formerly a longtime New York Times reporter and then formerly the editor-in-chief of HuffPost. It's part of our Code Media at Home series, which I think was a roaring success. So thanks to everyone who showed up live for that. You are hearing our live conversation on tape. It'll sound a little different than our normal podcast, but it'll work. Lydia is wicked smart, so it's always good to talk to her. And in this case, we talked to her about Gimlet's podcasting strategy and Spotify's podcast strategy and some discussion about the state of the media in general. Since you're hearing this after our conversation, you'll note a couple things. Lydia was reticent to talk about Joe Rogan, but I wanted her to ask about Joe Rogan anyway. She's not in the Joe Rogan business, but her employer is, so I wanted to hear her talk about that, even though it's slightly uncomfortable. You will also notice that we talked about the future of HuffPost, which I said was for sale, and Lydia didn't think was for sale. She was kind of right, but she was definitely wrong. As we found out that night, and as you heard that night in my podcast with Jonah Peretti, BuzzFeed bought HuffPost, so the analysis about where it would go isn't kind of relevant, but it's still good to hear from her about her old employer. Okay, enough from me. Now let's hear from Lydia, and happy Thanksgiving. Hi, Lydia.
Hey, Peter. How are you? It's great to see you.
It's great to see you. It's better to see you in person, but this will do. Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Whenever I talk to you, at least since the spring, I always start off the conversation by saying, wait, what is it that you do again? What is your job? You're head of content. You're not running podcasts for Spotify. You're not running Gimlet, but you're running content for Gimlet, which is a big part of Spotify's podcasting push. So you want to just set the table for us real quick?
Sure. I joined Spotify and Gimlet in April, and really the ask was to figure out what the future should look like for Gimlet. Gimlet, of course, has created an iconic set of shows, has really kind of set the template for what podcasting and the podcast industry is going to look like in a lot of ways, has set a really high bar for quality in terms of what narrative storytelling is. I think has been a major innovator in terms of fiction storytelling. So that's all great. But then once you get acquired by a big technology platform, how do you take all of the resources, the data, the smarts that Spotify brings to the table and really scale up what Gimlet, the kind of the seed of what Gimlet has created and turn it into something bigger and even more ambitious. So I think that's really the ask is to try and make more of the success that Gimlet already is.
You are a lifelong news person, many years for the New York Times and then running a big news operation for HuffPost. Was your thought, I'm done with news? Oh, was your thought, I want to get in on this podcasting thing? I hear it's exciting. What brought you over?
Well, I'll remind you that Gimlet produces a daily news podcast with the Wall Street Journal called The Journal. It's an incredibly insightful and popular podcast, so we're definitely not entirely out of the daily news business. But this is definitely the first time in 20 years that I have not been working at a news organization whose primary focus is putting out a daily product, which is a pretty big change. And yes, that's pretty intentional. I think I left the New York Times after Donald Trump was elected president, in part because I felt like this was a good moment to think differently about media and think about the role that the media plays and ways to think beyond just the sort of traditional of legacy print organizations. And that felt like a really great moment to try something that felt more kind of full-throatedly tabloid and populist, which was I think a really great experience and a great experiment. And I think similarly, After that experience, I've been thinking a lot about the role of journalism in persuading and changing people's minds and making people more informed. And I was really intrigued with the idea of using longer forms of storytelling, deeper forms of storytelling, more intimate forms of storytelling to inform people. And I think podcasting has emerged as one of the best platforms for telling complex, nuanced human stories. And I took a look at it and said, that's a place where I want to be. And it's I think for me an evolution of how I think about my role as a communicator and a storyteller.
What you really wanted to say was Peter Kafka was doing podcasting. That seemed like a good idea. I wanted to get in on that. You knew your way around digital. At the Times, you were a digital person. You have HuffPost is obviously an all digital platform. But those are still traditional publishing companies that are coming to digital. Spotify is a technology company. It's definitely a publisher, but it often describes itself as a platform the way most of these technology companies that don't want to be called publishers describe themselves. And you've been on the job since April. It's COVID. You probably haven't met most people you work with, but you still have some sense of the culture and how things operate. Does it feel very different working at sort of a tech company that also does content as opposed to your last two gigs?
It's interesting. Spotify has a very distinct culture, and it's one that allows subcultures to flourish and really have an independent identity of their own. So being part of the arm of Spotify that creates content, it really doesn't feel that different from being at a traditional content creation company, because we're allowed to be who we are and work how we work, except we get the benefit of having access to some of the most extraordinarily talented technologists in the world, and the data, the machine learning, the algorithms, all the things that they create are put in service to helping us make better content and distribute that content. So I think because of the uniqueness of Spotify's culture, there's this best of both worlds environment where you get to really stay true to yourself as a content person.
So publishers were traditionally sort of, they didn't deal with a lot of data for a long time. They had ad rates and they had subscriber numbers, and that was kind of it. And over the last 10 years, wrenchingly, they've sort of come to grips with the idea that they really have to sort of dig into who their customers are, what they're consuming, what they might want to consume, how to reach them, how to market them. Do you have a sense that sort of Spotify's data set knows more about me than the New York Times data set does or the HuffPost data set does?
I mean, I think that our knowledge, I mean, first of all, I should say I'm not a technologist and I don't work on the technology side of Spotify. I think that the great promise is that just as Spotify helped people discover the best music for them, and it didn't just know what you liked, it was able to predict what you might like. I think that there's a lot of really fascinating work going on around the company that's trying to solve this problem for spoken word audio too. So we'll be able to bring you great new programming that you might not even be aware exists. But because we understand your listening habits, we can bring you something that feels really relevant and true to you in the same way that we do with music.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's going to be really interesting that Spotify might be surfacing stuff to me that I didn't know exists. There's a podcast project you're very passionate about called Resist. But the only reason I knew it existed is because I follow you on Twitter. Spotify didn't tell me about it. A reader, Steve Cavendish, I think, had a similar question. How are you guys thinking about innovating on distribution, and how long before Spotify can sort of bring that data in the service of finding me something that I didn't know existed, or telling me that if I like this, I might like that, beyond the sort of very crude, here's a tech podcast stuff that both Apple and Spotify do right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're already doing a significant amount of it. You know, we have great colleagues who are in charge of editorial programming. We have a bunch of surfaces on which we can show relevant podcasts to people who are on our app. I mean, Spotify has 300 million users, over 300 million users around the world. So we have the opportunity to show that podcast to people. But I think some of that is happening already, but it's going to get finer and finer grained. And I don't know about your listening habits, Peter, so it could be that resistance wasn't surfaced to you, but you know, it'd be interesting to see what's in your recommended podcasts right now.
It's a lot of comedy nerd stuff, probably. And
I mean, I didn't
stuff.
Want to embarrass you, but I assumed that it was stuff that was much less elevated than a fine show like Resistance.
I'm not embarrassed about my lack of elevation, but I mean, and part of it is not knowing. Like, one of the reasons that Spotify Discover is so interesting, right, is that it picks stuff that I would never go find, and often it gets it wrong. It keeps trying to get me to listen to Primus. If you remember the mid 90s, it's terrible stoner bass driven music. I don't want it, and it keeps shoving it to me. So it's not a genius at it. But I am waiting for sort of the stuff to come out of left field on the podcast front. On the other hand, when Spotify says listen to this song, I can listen to it. I can listen to the entire thing, and it's 3 minutes or 15 seconds, and I can bail out of it. Podcasts, you generally have to kind of sit in for a while, especially, you know, half hour, 40 minutes. How are you thinking about sort of getting people to sample a podcast?
It's a great question. And there's a bunch of innovation that's been happening at Spotify. And I think we think about the existing podcast audience. And if you look at the most recent Edison research, the share of ear has tripled since 2014, but it's gone from 2% to 6%, right? So that's still a pretty small share of ear, even though it's tripled.
Share of ear, that's a new one. But I mean, I've also seen Edison stats that say, you know, the crazy numbers, like half the country has listened to a podcast, which frankly does not seem possible.
Right.
So let's imagine it's somewhere between very small and decent, but will grow more. But if I either have never heard of Resist and you want me to try to sample it, or I don't listen to podcasts at all, I'm just an audio, I just listen to music on Spotify, how do you get me to commit some time? You know, when 5 years ago, when Facebook video was a thing, you would just shove Facebook video in front of people's face, and there were people trying to figure out how to get you to pay attention in 3 seconds. You can kind of do that visually. I don't know how you do it with an audio format.
Yeah, totally. And I think this is something that we've been thinking about a lot at Gimlet. And we've been involved in some of the most important innovations in this regard. I see the really big opportunity is less like, let's do lots more podcasts and get lots of, eventually we'll get lots of people listening to 30, 45 minute podcasts, or, you know, binging an 8-episode season of a great documentary. But I think the first hurdle that we need to get over is, you know, I talked about that 300 million people who are on Spotify. It's fewer than half of them, I don't have the numbers at hand, who listen to podcasts, and the number who listen to more than 30 minutes of podcasts a week is even smaller, right? So our real goal is to get people in the habit of listening to content on Spotify that's not music. And there are lots of different ways to do that. And one of them is a product called Your Daily Drive, which you may have experienced. It's a mix of short form spoken content. It could be news reports. It could be shorter versions of Gimlet shows. So, for example, our shows Science Versus and Every Little Thing both have versions that will go into Your Daily Drive, or our news podcast, The Journal. And that's personalized music mixed in with produced audio segments.
Kind of sounds like radio, right?
It's a little like radio,
but and I mean, personalized, right? So you're picking me music that you think I'll like, and then are you picking is the news content also based on something
me? The whole thing is personalized, and some, you know, they're so you're getting podcast, you're getting audio content, spoken word audio content that we think that you're going to like, and you're getting music that we think you're going to like. And then you go even further, and you know, last month we launched a new show called The Get Up, which is a morning show that we are producing every day, every Monday through Friday, that is a mix of kind of morning zoo news and talk that that is interspersed with curated personalized music. So it's music that we think you would like in your morning routine. So it's not just all of your music. It's things that we think are appropriate to that state of mind. But so it's using that special sauce that Spotify has in music and interspersing it with talk. And, you know, we brought in three amazing hosts that are really fun and warm and chatty. And, you know, it's your typical sort of morning zoo show, except the music that you're getting is music that that you want to hear. And that's especially there for you.
I want to ask you more about personalization in a minute, but the product you're talking about is what we used to call a drive time show, right?
Yeah.
There's been not much drive time during the pandemic. And at the beginning of the pandemic, audio consumption went down, even as video skyrocketed. And then what we kept hearing was that audio was climbing back.
Yep.
What's your sense of listening trends late fall 2020 compared to when you started?
I think people have figured out how to reincorporate audio into their lives and into their routines, which has been really exciting to see. So, you know, the GetUp, where we were initially imagining people would be listening to on their commutes, in the car or on the train. And what we're finding is, first of all, you know, over almost 500,000 people are listening to the show every month, which is really impressive for a brand new show. And, second, we're seeing that people are streaming it from their desktop. They're listening in numbers and in ways that we had not anticipated, but they're finding value in the show, even though they're not, there's no such thing as drive time for many people now. So it's been really exciting to see that people are still making time for audio. And I think when you think about podcasts as a kind of lean forward, captivating all your attention kind of experience, There's very limited windows of time where one might have that on. But when you start thinking about more lean back experiences, I think that the amount of time that people have for consuming that kind of content while they're doing other things is really huge. I don't know what your experience during pandemic has been, but one of the hobbies that I've taken up over this time is doing puzzles. And what I found is the perfect thing to do while doing puzzles is listen to audio shows and podcasts. So I think we're finding that people are developing new habits and incorporating listening into their lives in different ways now.
Do you think, I mean, is listening back to where it was pre-pandemic for Spotify?
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah. For Gimlet, I don't want to speak to all of Spotify, but certainly for Gimlet, we've definitely seen a full recovery.
So this idea of sort of the podcast being this immersive thing that you've got to give all your attention to, that's the way I normally think about it. Like, unfortunately, that's why I've stopped reading in a lot of cases, is because my commute time is now, used to be on the train listening to podcasts, and I can't read and listen to a podcast. And also because the stuff generally sort of requires you to engage in it. It's either, you know, the traditional formats in podcasting right now are some kind of talk show, some version of what we're doing now. It's what my Recode Media show is. Or it's, you know, it's narrative podcast, you know, popularized by Serial, Startup, the co-founders of Gimlet made a Serial podcast about the creation of their podcast, True Crime Podcasts. And that's kind of it. There hasn't been a lot of experimentation. So what else do you think you might be experimenting with, trying out over the next year or so?
Well, I think in introducing people to podcasting through short form, I think it's going to be a really big part of it. And I think mixed media is going to be a really big part of it, right? It's the playlists that are interspersed with talk segments, I think, are going to introduce a whole new cohort of people to the idea of streaming audio in this way. And then I also think that vodcasting is going to be important. You know, we are doing some narrow experimentation with vodcasting.
Explain what a vodcast is.
Pardon?
That's a VOD cast.
Yeah, it's a podcast with video, basically.
So what does that mean? That like this, where someone would watch a version of this, or the
yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, this is a thing that's popular on YouTube, as you're probably aware. And so bringing some of that capability on a, you know, kind of test and learn basis to Spotify is something that's currently happening as well.
What are you most excited to try out, or what would you like to see that doesn't exist right now?
That's a great question. I mean, I'm really excited to take the GetUp format and stamp it out in lots of different ways. I could see doing shows that combine music and talk in ways that feel really, really exciting. Right now, we're doing a version of it that's for the morning. I'd love to do a slightly racier version that is more kind of comedy based, that would be an afternoon drive time version of the show. I'm really excited to see like the full flowering of documentary storytelling in audio form. I think we've yet to see a show that's become the sort of 60 minutes for audio, investigative, but coming out on a regular cadence, something that's weekly, that's really kind of appointment listening, and gets into deep journalistic storytelling. I'm really interested in a daily fiction podcast. I think there's a lot of space for a kind of, soap opera style, short form, fictional podcast that is set in an interesting place. And people are
experimenting a little bit with those too, I think, outside of your company.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of experimentation going on across the industry. I've been spending a lot of time on fiction just because I feel like it's a place where there's a ton of room for innovation. And we've had quite a bit of success with fiction at Gimlet, and we want to build on that.
We're taking a quick break from our chat with Lydia. We'll be right back.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we're back. So back when Gimlet was a standalone company, I talked to the founders. A big part of their push was, we're good at making podcasts, and the next thing we're going to do is start turning these podcasts into TV shows and movies. And they were able to do that with varying degrees of success. Another big podcast studio, Wondery, that's their entire pitch, at least to investors, is we make these great things that can then become TV shows and movies. We're in the IP business. How much of your time are you spending thinking about how Project X will turn into a TV show or a streaming series?
I think it's really exciting when a piece of IP that we develop becomes something else. But remember, Spotify is a digital subscription company, right? I mean, we're an audio company that is in the race for your ear. So I think the IP piece of the business is important and exciting.
But it sounds like it's diminished a bit in terms of the business plan or the focus, because that was a big push prior to being bought by Spotify.
Well, I think it's a big deal. On both ends. I think one of the things that I'm really excited about is, the high profile talent that is coming into podcasting and developing types of IP there with us, which then we can go back to film and TV. So, there's a range of really interesting, creators, whether it's, you know, the Duplass brothers or, you know, DC Comics and others that are working closely with Spotify. And of course, the Obamas with their Higher Ground imprint that are developing IP with us in the audio platform. I mean, we love when our shows get optioned. And I mean, I think we've got, I would say, a dozen projects that are either in development or currently, you know, currently have under option or whatever you want to call it. And that's incredibly exciting. And we love to be in that business. I wouldn't call it a primary driver. I think it's a
so
nice
if you're green lighting
job.
A show that isn't determinative, like could this be another thing besides a podcast?
I think the most important thing for us at Gimlet is that something be an amazing podcast. You know, things that are amazing podcasts tend to find life in other forms too.
There's a very specific question here about the Reply All hosts no longer read ads on their shows because post Spotify acquisition, they can't veto advertisers. I can't fact check this live. Doesn't this make the ads less relevant? Asks Eric.
This is a little outside of my area of expertise, but as far as I understand it, the ads are not host read on many of our shows. We have advertising standards at Spotify that certain kinds of advertisers are acceptable, and as long as someone meets those standards and they're pretty stringent, then we'll place those ads on our shows. So that's the way it works.
So while we're asking you uncomfortable questions that are outside your area of expertise, but still relevant to Spotify, you're not in the Joe Rogan business. That's a different part of Spotify podcasting. He's not formally a Spotify employee. I guess he's licensing his show. But as everyone listening to this knows, many listeners and several Spotify employees have said they're uncomfortable with Spotify hosting Joe Rogan. So as a Spotify employee, I'm curious what you think about sort of sharing space with Joe Rogan and whether you're comfortable with him being on Spotify.
I think my personal opinion isn't super relevant, but what I would say is, you know, look, Joe Rogan is an important voice in our culture. He's a person who draws a huge audience. He's a really interesting interviewer. He makes some controversial choices on who to interview. Spotify has really robust content policies that are that are placed on all content that is produced and exists on our platform. And I trust my colleagues to make those decisions. That's what they're there to do.
What's your sense of how Spotify is sort of getting its spot? It started by Daniel Ek, who's a technologist. Like a lot of people in technology, I think hasn't been super comfortable saying, I like this, I don't like that, I want people to hear this, I don't want them to hear that. It falls back on this platform argument. Again, you are very much a publisher studio model. Like nothing gets through on Gimlet by accident. But Spotify has a mix of this stuff. How do you feel like the company is sort of dealing with that mix of models and mix of editorial control or lack of control?
I mean, this is sort of outside of my realm of expertise. But what I will say is, you know, unlike many technology platforms, Spotify really has leaned forward to own the production of content and to give an extraordinary amount of independence to the studios that are creating that content. So, you know, if you talk to me or you talk to Bill Simmons over at The Ringer or Max Cutler at Parcast, you know, we're given really, really wide latitude to set our own agenda and publish the kind of podcasts and content that we're excited about. So I would say that as far as technology companies go, Spotify has shown a tremendous amount of confidence in allowing its homegrown studios to really be free to express their own voices.
Should we spend like 30 more minutes on Joe Rogan, or is that not what you signed on for?
Sure, why not?
Okay, we'll see if anyone else has questions. But I think
the Kanye interview was really, really interesting.
Did he just have a Kanye interview?
He did. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think Kanye should be doing interviews. I don't think people should be interviewing Kanye right now. I think they should give him some alone time.
I think his wife might agree with you on that.
That's the first time Kim and I agree, I think, perhaps. let me ask you about a couple of your old gigs. Huffington Post, HuffPost is owned by Verizon. You and I have talked in the past about why that might have been a good home for HuffPost, at least when you were an employee there. Now Verizon is trying to sell it. What's a good home for a large scale digital publisher in 2020? I mean, I'm assuming you still have affection for the product and people who work there. Where would you like to see them end up?
I mean, I think that HuffPost is an iconic media brand. It, you know, continues to draw a massive audience. And I think any digital media, anybody with aspirations in digital media would be lucky to own that brand. I think it requires a strong stomach and a desire to make significant investments in alternative forms of monetization to really lean into premium advertising. I think one of the real struggles that we had at HuffPost being part of Verizon Media is that Verizon Media was essentially Yahoo, and it was a publishing company that you know had lots of great journalism, but really made up in volume and was all about the kind of volume play and selling audiences. And if you're going to be a publisher of quality, as Vox is, you need to be really committed to you know, much greater diversification in terms of where you're getting your revenue from. So if you're relying on low CPM, you know, audience buys, it's just, you're going to really struggle to be able to do any kind of quality journalism. And, you know, over the time that I was at HuffPost, we saw the branded content business just tank. The bottom really fell out of it.
What was happening there? Was it competition or was the appetite for that stuff going away? Because for a while, that was everyone's answer, Vox Media as well. We're in the branded content business. And it seems like there's a lot less talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's become like less part of the growth scenario and more, you know, one sort of piece of the puzzle, right? And look, let's be honest, this is a very low margin business. It's a place where every little bit helps, right? You need your the programmatic advertising that, and then layered on top of that, you need the creamy layer of brand advertising. And then on top of that, you need a membership program or some sort of, you know,
something you can sell to a consumer.
You know, you need to be able to put together a whole bunch of things in order to make a whole picture. I mean, that's how hard this is. I mean, look, there's a lot of talk about, you know, a SPAC that's gonna, you know, gobble up all these digital media companies, BuzzFeed, and perhaps your employer as well. It's a time where, you know, everybody's talking about consolidation, and this is a really, really tough business. I mean, it's not easy to make it, but I would never count HuffPost out. It's a very, very strong brand, and it has a deeply loyal audience of people who really love it. And I think the ideal scenario would be that somebody will buy it and make something great out of it. Or perhaps Verizon will decide, hey, this is a gem. And to be fair, as far as I know, that sale business is just a rumor.
I think it's real. This is the first time in 2020 with SPAC has come up on one of my podcasts. So congrats, you broke the barrier.
Wow, you've avoided SPAC talk on a media podcast?
I told
podcast?
My editor recently that I think we should do a SPAC explainer. And my editor, who's very smart, said, I've never heard of a SPAC. So I think it's a very focused segment of our audience that knows what that is. The first time you and I sat down formally and had a recorded conversation was post 2016, you were taking over HuffPost, and this was part of that period in news media where everyone was trying to figure out how did we miss Trump in 2016? What did we miss about Trump? And more importantly, what did we miss about America that elected Trump? 4 years later, you're out of the daily news business. You're now just a news consumer. Do you think the news media did a good job explaining who Trump and Trump voters are this time around? Because it seemed like, leaving the polls aside, many of us were still sort of surprised to see how strong Trump's appeal was in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I read an awful lot about the appeal of Trump and Trump supporters. I mean, I think again, we had a situation where the polls led us to believe that there was, you know, there was a greater repudiation of Trump and Trumpism than actually ended up happening. But you know, I feel like I read a ton of journalism about Trump supporters, diehard Trump supporters, and it's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of that, like, led me to be skeptical of the polls even early on, because there were stories, you know, whether they're in the New York Times or in the HuffPost, and, you know, from rural Ohio and from these places, or even, you know, talking to ex-urban voters. And so I actually feel like the media, if you set aside the very kind of poll focused media, did a pretty good job of making clear just how close this race was going to be. So I think that lesson was very much learned.
I'm going to turn this over to the audience in a minute to ask a few more questions, or I'll ask questions on their behalf. But this is a media conversation. I am legally required to ask you about Substack and the newsletter model. Two of my high profile Vox Media colleagues have recently gone over to Substack. It's very much, if you haven't heard of SPAC, you probably have heard of Substack and that model. What do you think about that idea of getting someone, of a flood of people moving into a one-person newsletter business?
There was a great story about this in the Columbia Journalism Review, which I would urge everyone watching or listening to check out. That probed some of the big questions that Substack raises. I think everyone looks at, you know, Ben Thompson and Stratechery, and they're like, oh, I could do that. But I think that there's a kind of first mover advantage for the people who got in on the paid newsletter trend, the individual paid newsletter trend, very early. And it's kind of like the people who got really big on Twitter really early, you know, the people who have like a million followers and you're like, who's that chump? And often the answer is they were just one of the first people.
YouTube was similar. If you were on YouTube early, you were a YouTube star.
And podcasting is similar, right? Like that there are certain people who just, you know, hit at the right time and accumulated a big audience. I mean, look, I think that anything that creates the possibility for journalists and storytellers to make a living off their work, I'm in favor of. I think that just looking at my own personal habits, I have signed up to a bunch of Substack newsletters because they are written by journalists that intrigue me or that I want to support. And I, you know, am looking at my bank statement and thinking, is it 10? Is 10 the number of Substacks that I can subscribe to? And I'm a really heavy news consumer. So I think it's going to be an interesting thing to see how many people can actually make a go of it. The other thing is, you know, I mean, in a pandemic, we're all looking at our like work-life balance and, you know, what kind of support structures do we have? For some people, this experience maybe made them think, oh, I don't need anybody else. But I think for a lot of us, we feel like, oh, can't wait to get back to the office and, you know, that annoying guy who picks his teeth in meetings.
Not that guy, but other people. It's great to collaborate. I'm a big fan of it. It turns out
I have not set foot in the office that I work in with my colleagues at Gimlet and Spotify. So I'm very much looking forward to getting back to the office.
Some audience questions. So there's a couple questions about Spotify versus Apple and Spotify exclusivity. Spotify has played around with making some podcasts exclusive. Even before they bought Gimlet, there were some exclusives on Spotify. When I went out to check out Resist, because I knew it was something you were interested in, I was curious whether it was on Apple Podcasts. It is. How do you guys think through at Gimlet, and what's the larger thinking at Spotify about what stuff is exclusive to Spotify and what stuff is largely distributed everywhere?
Doing a lot of experimentation and you know, we are you know, we want to be where listeners are, and our core conviction at Spotify is that you know, that we will be the audio platform, and that we will be the place that is most convenient and most enjoyable to consume audio content. I embrace exclusivity as a way to get us to the place that we want to be. But there's no question that we're in a moment where you know, there's still a lot of audience at lots of different places. So I think we're experimenting with a lot of different models. I mean, for example, Resistance is exclusive on Spotify's platform for the first couple of days, and then it goes out to a wide audience. So we're trying a lot of different things. You know, some shows will if they're a if it's a thing that we think people might want to binge, we might do a kind of episode by episode release on other platforms, but available to binge on Spotify. So I think we're playing around with lots of different types of exclusivity.
I mean, it's not the exact same model, but Luminary, which is still extant. It's a paid subscription podcast platform, also pitching exclusivity. I've talked to a bunch of creators there who say, you know, I'm glad we were able to cash their check, but we don't want to make podcasts that aren't available to our audience. It doesn't matter if people can't hear what we make. There's no point in doing it. I mean, do you get pushback from people at Gimlet who say, I want this to be widely distributed? I don't want this to be an exclusive.
I mean, I think the important thing to remember about Spotify is that it's a free service. You know, there is a premium tier, but it is a free service and all of our podcasts are available on that free tier. And it has an existing audience of over 300 million users. You know, it's a place where people are listening. So it's hard to see how that would be a disadvantage.
Fair enough. Beckett wants to know about teenage listeners at Gimlet. His thesis is they seem to be a huge portion of music listeners, but a tiny fraction of the podcast market. Are you guys thinking about the youngins?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We actually just wrapped up a 3-season run of our show, The Two Princes, which is really kind of aimed at tweens and teenagers. And it is a fictional show about two princes who fall in love. The last season was a musical and it was absolutely delightful. You should definitely check it out and Google some of the fan fiction that has emerged around it. Is pretty fun. Lots of cosplay. So we've definitely have some success in that area. I talked about Daily and sort of soap opera. That's an audience that I think, I mean, you can't help look at the rise of YA as a category. I'm very inspired by it. And of course, we worked for Don Ostroff, who was instrumental in making the CW a destination for teens. So, this is a very big priority for her as well.
It's a big priority is getting stuff into absolutely. Teens and tweens.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think, again, these like mixed media products, you know, where you're combining music and talk, I think are places where I think there's significant opportunity. And, you know, colleagues at Parcast, for example, have done some experimentation shows around influencers like Addison Rae. We're experimenting with lots of different things.
Sean wants to know what the next big advancement in podcasting ad tech would be that would raise advertiser rates, bring more brand, and maybe bring more brand money in the space. I'm not sure if the two things are oppositional, but what do you want from the ad side? What on the tech side? What would you like to see?
This is really, really outside of my area of expertise, I'm afraid.
So fair enough.
I'm gonna have to ask somebody else.
That's 100% reasonable response instead of making something up. Does anyone else from the audience have questions? Because I got a couple more for Lydia, and then we're gonna let her go because she's got a job to do. Okay. I did see your name floated, and I think you had an LOL on Twitter once it came out. But I do want to ask you for the record. CNN may have an opening running CNN. Jeff Zucker is going to probably leave. Would you get back into the daily news business if you could run a giant TV network?
I think that article was wildly speculative and and hugely flattering to me. I mean, CNN is a massive business, and while I like to think of myself as a pretty accomplished person, I don't know that running an organization of that size, and particularly the business side of an organization of that size is on the cards for me. You never say never. I'm really excited to be doing what I'm doing.
I like that you left a little opening. That's great. I don't think you should apply for a job on a live podcast when you're 6 months into your current job, which you're liking.
Well, I just want to be clear. I left an opening to the idea of going back to daily news at some point in what I hope will be a long career. I'm very excited to be working at Spotify and hope to be there for a very long time.
And last, any tips for anyone else who is starting a job mid-pandemic and won't meet their coworkers for months to come?
So one thing that I did, and I wish I'd started doing it earlier, was doing outdoor office hours in the park. And this isn't going to work for everybody. And of course, now we're going into the winter months, so that makes it difficult. I tried to have one-on-ones as many folks as I could who are based in New York.
Did you make them come to Brooklyn? Did you go to the city?
No, most of our folks live in Brooklyn because our office is in Brooklyn. But yeah, it was basically all Brooklyn based folks. And we got together in our, in a park near my apartment and, you know, kind of chewed the fat. That I felt like was a really good use of time. And, you know, time together in real life with people feels so incredibly precious. Even if you have to sit on a park bench and wear masks, it means so much. So yeah, that's my one tip. I mean, I can't claim that I have any real secrets here. You know, I think now that the days are getting dark earlier, it's gotten even harder to work from home and have boundaries between.
I know.
But
yeah, you know. Bundling up and waddling out in three layers to a park bench in January is going to be harder to pull off.
It's a hard sell. And, you know, I mean, I definitely some excitement in my household about these very promising sounding vaccines. I'd really like to get back to the office and the theater and all of the wonderful things that we used to do.
Hooray for science. Hooray for going outside. Hooray for Lydia Polgreen for coming on. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks again to Lydia Polgreen for coming on. Thanks again to our sponsors who let us bring Lydia Polgreen to you for free. Thanks again to Jelani and Joel who edited and produced this show. And thanks most of all to you guys for listening. I love making this show. I love that you like it. Some of you even like it a lot. It's all great. Love hearing from you. Look forward to making many more. Happy Thanksgiving.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.